There's an old joke about Michigan's seasons: fall, winter, spring, and road construction. The state that made the car a big deal also has a lot of roads, as you might imagine, and it feels like those roads are under repair all the time. The orange construction barrels are lined up in Traverse City already along the main drag through town. The detours begin this weekend and last through the summer. We're going to talk with local tourism officials about what it means for the busiest time of year in northern Michigan this week on the Up North Lowdown from Interlochen Public Radio. I'm Ed Ronco. We'll also round up some of the headlines from around the state, and Kate Patello teaches me about spelling.
So excited right now.
But we start this week by learning more about a federal lawsuit involving Line 5. The Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa is suing Enbridge Energy. They want the company to remove Line 5 from tribal lands. We'll remind you here, Line 5 is an international pipeline carrying crude oil and natural gas liquids, and it cuts across the top of Wisconsin before entering Michigan and includes a section that runs along the floor of the Straits of Mackinac. Anyway, in Wisconsin, the Bad River Band says Enbridge is trespassing and the pipeline is threatening the watershed. IPR climate reporter Izzy Ross talked about all of that with IPR's Tyler Thompson, starting with why a case in Wisconsin matters to people living in Michigan.
Tribes here and across the Great Lakes are saying this case could have major implications for tribal sovereignty. First, a little background. The Bad River Band sued Enbridge in 2019, saying it was trespassing on land where easements had expired years earlier. A federal court ruled in favor of the band last year, giving Enbridge 3 years to shut down that section of the pipeline. It also ordered the company to pay the tribe over $5 million. But both parties appealed. The tribe says the timeline was too long and the compensation wasn't enough. Enbridge and the government of Canada say shutting down the pipeline before it's rerouted would violate a treaty between the U.S. and Canada.
Right. So this is one of the arguments in Enbridge's appeal that's getting a lot of attention. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
The United States signed a treaty with Canada in 1977 where they agreed not to cut off the transport of oil and gas between the two countries. And invoking that treaty in these kinds of cases is rare. Enbridge declined IPR's request for an interview. The company maintains that shutting down the pipeline before it's rerouted would not be in the public interest. Here's Enbridge attorney Alice Loughran during oral arguments last month.
The district court shutdown order in this case will cause a massive disruption in energy supplies and economies in the Midwest and Canada.
She also says that section of the pipeline is less than 0.5% of the total length of Line 5.
Enbridge's proposed reroute of the pipeline is another issue, right?
Yeah, Enbridge said in a statement that it doesn't intend to be on the Bad River Reservation, quote, for a moment longer than it takes to relocate the segment of Line 5 around the reservation. But the Bad River Band has rejected the route Enbridge proposed, saying it still threatens their watershed.
So let's hear more about the Bad River Band's argument.
Well, they have two: that Enbridge is trespassing on their lands and that it's creating a public nuisance. Basically that by continuing to operate the pipeline there, it's risking rupture. The band has also pointed out to its 1854 treaty with the U.S. That recognizes its right to exclude non-Indian people from its lands. The band has pointed out that a section of the transit treaty does allow for pipelines to be regulated. It also argues that Enbridge is creating a public nuisance by threatening the tribe's sources of food and water, as well as their ways of life.
So now tribes across the Great Lakes are asking the federal government to weigh in on this case. Why?
They say it has serious implications for tribal sovereignty and the transition away from fossil fuels, and the Biden administration should show where it stands. Whitney Gravel is the president of the Bay Mills Indian Community.
Whatever decision this court makes will have an impact not only on the Bad River Band, but also on every single tribal nation in the United States. And the determinations made will either continue to support tribal sovereignty or it will undercut tribal sovereignty and allow foreign corporations to trespass on tribal land without any ramifications.
She says Canada's interpretation of the 1977 treaty could set a precedent.
If the United States doesn't weigh in, what they are risking is that states, tribes, and even the federal government could be subject to trespass by a corporation for the rest of time.
And so far, the federal government has been pretty quiet on this?
Yeah, and that's unusual. The courts have repeatedly asked the administration to speak on the case. And a day before oral arguments last month, the administration finally submitted a one-page notice saying they needed an additional 30 days. That lack of input extends to other aspects of the case, like Enbridge's proposed reroute. Frank Easterbrook is one of the federal judges on the panel that heard oral arguments. Here he is speaking to Enbridge's attorney.
It really is extraordinary in a way that the United States and all of its agencies collectively have maintained silence about this.
Well, the court has asked for the brief.
We've asked them to break their silence.
The State Department declined our request for an interview.
How important is the U.S. response in this case?
It's expected to carry quite a bit of weight. They are one of the two parties in this 1977 treaty being invoked by Canada. Now, we don't know how they're going to respond. The band's attorney said in court that he doesn't think the U.S. will agree with Canada that it's in violation of that treaty, but we'll have to wait and see.
Climate reporter Izzy Ross, speaking with IPR's Tyler Thompson. Find much more about this on our website, iprnews.org. Izzy's work comes to us through a partnership with Grist. The Up North Lowdown, we'll be right back.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey friends, Dan Wanchura here, host of IPR's Points North podcast. Points North Great Lakes Trivia is coming back to Benzie County. Season 2 features brand new questions plus a few other surprises. We'll be at Stormcloud Brewing Company in Frankfort on Monday, March 18th at 7. Come hang out, grab a drink, and maybe even walk away with your new favorite pint glass. For more info, including other locations we'll be at this year, go to pointsnorthpodcast.org and click the banner.
Welcome back to The Lowdown. I'm Ed Ronco. This week, they appeared on the side of the road in Traverse City, hundreds of orange construction barrels all lined up along the curb like people at a parade, waiting to be moved into place. A months-long construction project is about to begin along East Front Street and Grandview Parkway, the main drags through downtown TC, and it's going to last into November, which means that this thoroughfare, already heavily trafficked in the summer, will be out of commission for our busiest time of year. So what does that mean for tourism? IPR's Michael Livingston called around to find out.
Orange cones are lining one of Traverse City's busiest streets ahead of one of the community's largest road reconstruction projects to date. Starting Sunday, the Michigan Department of Transportation is rebuilding US 31 from Garfield Avenue to just east of the city's downtown area. But that's just phase one. Later in the summer, the project will be close to the city's beachfront and is expected to cause traffic backups on a heavily traveled stretch of US 31. The $24.7 million project has been in talks for years. In addition to rebuilding the roads, it will add more pedestrian walkways and improve critical wastewater infrastructure. The work is set to last until November. Downtown business owners have already expressed concerns with the heavy detours at public meetings. They worry the project may keep people from visiting downtown shops and restaurants. However, area tourism officials, like Trevor Tkach, president of Traverse City Tourism, say the construction shouldn't pose a problem for them.
The construction will be a challenge for many visitors this year, but we don't anticipate a slowdown in occupancy.
Occupancy, as in the number of people staying in hotels and motels. He says in most cases, tourists rarely will look at road and traffic conditions ahead of their vacation. But this summer, they will need to find a way to adapt once they get to the area.
What we're doing at Traverse City Tourism is dispersing as much information to our lodging member properties as we possibly can so that they can inform their guests on how to best navigate Traverse City once they get here.
A local bus service will adjust its routes to help navigate traffic detours. Tkach says the Traverse Area Recreation Trail will also prove valuable for moving people this summer. The reconstruction of Front Street will also pave the way for expansions to the trail. But will the construction move visitors to other vacation destinations in northern Michigan?
I can't imagine that droves of people would come here instead of going there because of that road being under construction.
Amanda Wilkins is executive director of Visit Charlevoix, the community's tourism agency.
I would imagine that most people that are trying to visit downtown Traverse City would still do that and find a way to get there.
The thought is much the same in other vacation spots further north. Areas like Charlevoix, Petoskey, and Boyne City have historically been destinations for short getaways and weekend vacations. Officials say those types of trips saw a spike during the pandemic years. According to the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, Charlevoix County saw about $70 million more spent by visitors in 2021 compared to 2020. The spending was even higher than pre-pandemic levels. Sarah Van Horn is the president of Charlevoix Chamber of Commerce.
People were looking for driving destinations versus flying destinations. So we benefited from that. And I think what we're planning for this upcoming season is pretty on par with what we saw last year, which was down a little bit from like the height of the pandemic, but, you know, pretty on par for what our trajectory kind of would have been, you know, if we didn't have kind of those COVID years that spiked everything so much up here.
Emmett County saw a greater spike. More than $100 million more dollars flowed into their economy in places like Petoskey and Boyne City during the pandemic. While those spikes are expected to level off in the next few years, officials say they presented some new problems when it comes to recruiting and retaining the area workforce. Jim Powell is director of Petoskey Visitors Bureau. He said those problems will likely persist this summer.
I think it's always going to be a challenge, especially with some of the housing challenge that exists up here in northern Michigan and all over the state for that matter. You know, I think we as consumers understand and respect that. And, you know, when I walk into a restaurant, my expectations are certainly a little different than they were previously.
And road construction or not, officials say northern Michigan's tourism-based economy will continue to require creative solutions.
That story from IPR's Michael Livingston. Sometimes in radio, you get asked to do things that are sort of like your skill set, but not actual radio. Our own Kate Botello knows this well because this weekend, she is the pronouncer for the regional Scripps Howard Spelling Bee. And the winner here in Traverse City goes to nationals. Kate is with us now to talk a little about this and maybe school me in how this job works. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Ed.
This title, pronouncer of the spelling bee, is pretty self-explanatory, but what exactly does the pronouncer do?
Well, I'll tell you, it is and it isn't.
Okay.
I kind of have the best job because I'm their friend up there. I'm the one person. I don't ring any bells. I don't make any judgments. I don't tell them when they've done something wrong. My job is to read them the word. But there's so much more than that, mm-hmm. Okay? Because I can also give them all the hints. I have to make sure they understand the word, because they'll say it back to me a whole bunch of times.
Yeah.
But then they can ask me for the hints, like...
Like use it in a sentence.
A definition.
Uh-huh.
Language of origin. Use it in a sentence or alternate pronunciations. And that's where we also get into some of the thick of things. It's pretty interesting.
So anybody who's ever seen a spelling bee clip even knows that there's a lot of pressure on the kids. They're up there. They're kind of sweating. They're fidgeting. You can see them. They all have little processes for how they spell the word. I would imagine there's some pressure for you, too.
Oh, yeah. Because if they get it, it's my voice that's going to echo in their brains forever.
Your eyes got really big when I asked you that question.
Yeah. Because if I blow it, I'm the one that has blown it for this kid that has spent unending amount of time working on it. So I'm there really to help them out and try to help them stay calm and to do all of that. So if I make the mistake and I mess them up, that would just break my heart.
Well, and there are rules about how you say the words, because we all have ways that we're used to pronouncing words, but then there are official ways to pronounce words.
Oh, here, let me show you how sticky this can be. Read that word right there.
Expedient.
Expedient. Right.
Yes.
That is how you and I, news and radio people, would say the word expedient.
Yes.
You can hear the E's in that, right?
Yes.
Expedient. Correct?
Right.
Well, you have to use, in this situation, what they call common American pronunciation. So I have to use exactly whatever diacritical marks, whatever pronunciation marks are in that book.
Okay.
Okay. So if they think I need to pronounce the word expedient, because it's more common to say expedient. You're not saying ent necessarily. You're saying ent. It's going to have a schwa in there.
Okay, so we can hear the difference. I'll say it the way I say it, then you say it the spelling bee way.
Okay.
Expedient.
Expedient.
So I said ent and you said unt.
And I said unt. Expedient.
Yeah. Expedient.
So that's going to have a schwa.
Wow.
I can't say that E because that's giving them a hint that's not in the book, unless it's listed as an alternate pronunciation. And I can only give them that pronunciation if they ask for it.
I'm hearing you describe this and I'm already breaking out into a cold sweat.
I'm telling you, it's real.
Okay, so last year, Leland middle schooler Hazel Danziger went to nationals. The Record Eagle reports that she secured her victory with two words.
Yes.
Marionette and ramifications. Do you remember this?
I do remember this. And there's another one. Ramification.
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 Yeah.
It's a ramification.
Uh-huh.
It's not a ramification.
Oh.
But according to the book, it's a ramification. Right. So you see?
Okay.
You see?
So you have the Kate way of saying things.
Yes.
You have the book way of saying things.
Right.
You also speak Spanish. Does that get in your way at all or like change the way you say certain words?
Sometimes. Okay. I am given, thank goodness, permission to occasionally skip one.
Okay.
So if I find one where I think the schwa rule is just completely out of hand, I'll drop that. Or if it's a Spanish word, but it is like so completely unbelievably anglicized and wrong that I can't bring myself to do it,
yeah.
I won't do it. But you cannot use Spanish pronunciation.
Okay.
So it'll be like maracas.
Uh-huh.
You know, not maracas. Like
right.
Maracas.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So you gotta just kind of, because there are a lot of foreign words.
Right.
In the book, Dutch.
English borrows.
Oh, yeah.
A ton of words.
Or they're just straight up unborrowed, like it's just a Dutch word.
So I was in an adult spelling bee once, and there was a contestant in this bee who had grown up in Paris, France. He's French by birth and had lived in the U.S. for 20 years, but he kept getting words that were borrowed from French. rendezvous and avoirdupois, I think, was one of his words, which why?
Why?
Anyway, have you ever seen that happen?
I haven't. Oh, I felt horrible about it because I had a young Latina. And let me tell you, there were like 25 kids in the bee, okay? Uh-huh. It's random. With kids getting out between. Every time her term came up or her turn came up, it was a Mexican food. Every time. It was like enchilada. I'm so sorry. Burrito. I'm so sorry.
Oh,
chimichanga. I'm so sorry. Gordita. I'm so sorry. And it got to the point where the whole audience would just go nuts. Like every time she got another Mexican food word.
She took it in stride?
She did. And she got them all correct.
Total champ.
Yeah. She was like one of the last three spellers. She nailed them.
Oh,
she was amazing. Yeah.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
And of course to the B contestants. And we will see what happens this weekend, I suppose.
Yeah. Just hope that I can really make that difference between hall.
Excellent. Classical IPR morning host and regional spelling bee pronouncer, Kate Botello, B-O-T-E-L-L-O, Botello. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. It's time to shift gears a little bit and find out what else is making news in Michigan this week. The involuntary manslaughter trial began this week for James Crumbly. Prosecutors argued that he was the one adult who could have prevented his son from murdering four students at Oxford High School in 2021. They say he ignored signs that his son was troubled and failed to tell school officials he had recently bought the teen a gun. The defense says James never suspected that his son would use it to harm anyone. This trial comes about a month after Jennifer Crumbly, the shooter's mother, was found guilty of identical charges of involuntary manslaughter. State regulators have given approval for a $92 million rate hike for customers of Consumers Energy. The utility says the money will improve reliability and safety and allow for technology-related investments in the power grid. A canoeing business on the Platte River won a lawsuit against the National Park Service. That's according to MLive. Riverside Canoes had operated since the 1970s. Customers launch into the river inside Sleeping Bear Dunes National Lakeshore. In 2022, the National Park Service said the business needed a commercial use authorization, a special permit, basically, that would have required them to hand over some of their gross receipts to the federal government. The business sued, citing a 1992 agreement the previous owners had made with the Park Service, and they won. Riverside Canoes can head into the summer doing business as usual. Help for monarch butterflies. State lawmakers sent a bipartisan bill to the governor's desk this week, which would no longer consider milkweed as a noxious weed. Doing that removes it from many municipal bans. Monarch larvae feed exclusively on milkweed, and their populations have dropped significantly in the last 30 years. So, eat up, future butterflies, if the governor signs it, that is. That's it for the lowdown. We had contributions this week from Izzy Ross, Tyler Thompson, and Michael Livingston. Our music is from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Ed Ronco, and our producer is Max Copeland, who had this question for our Spelling Bee pronouncer friend, Kate Botello.
Do you have any alternate pronunciations on Botello?
Actually, yeah. It's supposed to be Botello, but my dad wanted to anglicize it for the Americans, so he goes by Botello, but everybody in Caracas, my whole family, likes Botello. That's how they all say my name.
Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Strategy games challenge the player's ability to think and plan, whether building cities, leading armies, or exploring faraway galaxies. On this program, we'll hear scores from games like StarCraft, Civilization, SimCity, and more. I'm Keith Brown. Join me for the music of Strategy Games, this week on Gameplay.
You can stream full episodes of Gameplay on demand and view playlists at gameplayshow.org.